Hello and welcome. I'm your host, Mark Roberti, and this is the podcast for entrepreneurs who are looking for the breakthrough for their businesses. We are all on a journey towards the summit of our ambitions. During this time, we'll encounter opportunities and challenges alike. The key is to stay strong as you approach your one of many summits in life, and in this episode, you will learn exactly how to reach your mountaintop. Today's guest is a professional speaker, authentic leadership expert, author, entrepreneur, world traveler, and humanitarian. Jeff has interviewed hundreds of world-renowned experts mixed with lots of practical application and is always leaving his audiences with useful tips and strategies. The TEDx speaker is also the author of the award-winning book, Reach Your Mountaintop, 10 Keys to Finding the Hidden Opportunity in Your Setbacks, Flipping What You've Heard on Its Head, and Achieving Legendary Goals. Today's guest for episode 123 of the Breakthrough Success Podcast is none other than Jeff Davis. Jeff, it is such a pleasure to have you on the show.
Mark, it's an honor to be here. Very excited to have our chat today.
Jeff, it is such a pleasure to have you on the show. But before we go really deep into how we can achieve our own mountaintops and sprinkle in some leadership insights as well, since you are the authentic leadership expert, I'd love to get some backstory. So what first ignited the flame that turned into your book, Reach Your Mountaintop?
Yes. So that was actually a 3-year project that came to fruition. And I had plenty of delays and pitfalls and setbacks throughout that journey. But what really ignited the flame is that I noticed that so many people in the world and society live their lives based on the expectations of other people. I mean, not just considering other people's expectations, but literally living their lives to please other people. Now, don't get me wrong, it's good to get feedback from other people, but where the whole process goes astray is when people are actually trusting what other people say more than they are trusting themselves. And Mark, for many years, well into my early to even mid-20s, I live my life dictated by outside forces, you know, what to study in school, what to do for work, what to do for hobbies. And it wasn't really until my, you know, early to mid-20s when I finally said, I'm going to break free from this external expectation, do what I feel is best. Ironically, that is when you're best able to help and serve others in the world. So that's what really ignited the flame to help other people define their own version of success and to not be pushed around by the external societal expectations that so many of us face.
And I do see that how we are trying to please others in a sense and live up to their expectations, which is a big mistake that I believe we should all be looking at that from time to time, even if we feel really confident that we're not and we're living to our own expectations, we're being ourselves. It's good to get that check every once in a while, but you mentioned how this book took you 3 years and you had a lot of setbacks. And setbacks, yes, they are natural, but I feel like when some people face enough setbacks, they just give up on a project. I mean, 3 years is a lot of time to commit to publishing a book, and most people aren't willing to stick it out for that long haul. So how do you recommend that we avoid letting all these setbacks we're going to face hold us back?
Yeah, so you really hit the nail on the head that, as you said, we're all going to face those setbacks, those trials and tribulations. And I certainly had my fair share of delays and times where I, you know, simply didn't feel like writing, or I had other responsibilities, or, you know, I had other obligations and other kinds of pressures. So how we can specifically move past some of those setbacks and delays is, you know, one, self-discipline. I find self-discipline is huge. It's really about forcing yourself to know, to do what you know you need to do, whether you feel like it or not. And what I found is that I was delaying for weeks and months because, you know, I had the ideas, I had the chapters, and I even had the interviews with some of these world-renowned experts that I talked to. But when I sat down, whether it be the beginning of the day or the end of the day, maybe I was tired, or I just had too much going on in my mind, or I was stressed out. And a lot of that delay came from really just not having that discipline. But the way I turned it around, and my advice to your listeners is, have that self-discipline to take action each and every day. And even if you're really busy, if you can just put 10 to 15 minutes, maybe 20 minutes a day into your project, whatever it is you're working on, that's a great way to push past those setbacks. And the second tip I have, and the other way to get past some of those setbacks, is to be very clear on who you're looking to help with your message. If you have a vague idea of who you might want to help, you may not really have the passion, the motivation, and the energy to finish the project. But if you get in your mind specifically the kinds of people who you know need to hear your message and who you know you can help, that's when you'll start to really push yourself, when you think to yourself, wow, people need to hear this. It's about helping them. It's about getting this message out there. So that's a great tip to implement as well.
And it seems like when we have these setbacks, it's sort of like tapping into your why power, like giving your, like, why am I doing this? Why should I push through this setback? Because if you tap into that why, like, for instance, getting a deeper look at your audience and seeing how you can be helping them who need you for help, that can really tap into that why power. But obviously, we have different schedules that we live by, and this is part of the setback we face. Like, there are a lot of different responsibilities we have to juggle around. Some people have a 9-to-5. Other people, they like, family has a dominant place in their life. And some people even have both of those scenarios. So we have so many different things going on, but we have to be able to leverage our time properly in order to get the results we're looking for. So, Jeff, how do you recommend that we manage our time better so we can get more done?
Yes, another great question. I love your questions. And let me say, you hit the nail on the head big time when you just said that it's also about knowing your why. That's awesome and very powerful and very true. The more reasons you have in terms of why you're achieving something, the more quickly and more motivated you will be to finish it. So in terms of time management, one thing that I actually shared in my book, Reach Your Mountaintop, is that time management is actually more so values alignment and life management. Here's what I mean by this. Yes, you are managing your time, but time management is really life management. It's really about knowing what are your values, what are your priorities, and doing what matters. You can be the most effective time manager in the entire world, but if you're climbing the wrong ladder, and to use the analogy of my book, if you're climbing the wrong mountain, you're not going to be happy, not only when you get to your end destination, but even while you're climbing that mountain. So what I'm encouraging my listeners and my readers and people I speak to when I'm speaking to various groups and conferences and schools is to be very clear on what mountain they want to climb. If you are so caught up in do, and you aren't taking a step back to know what you're doing and why you're doing it, you might miss the mountain that's for you entirely. So that's a really key point that I like to share with time management. It's really life management, it's values alignment, it's priorities, it's doing what matters. And then another tip I'd like to share, and this has gone really well, is to break down those huge, seemingly insurmountable projects into small, tiny, minute-by-minute, bite-sized tasks that you can accomplish. So rather than worrying about a huge book project, just to take, for example, a book, try focusing on a chapter. And if a chapter seems overwhelming, try writing a page. If a page is overwhelming, try writing a paragraph. And what I've found as a writer and an author is that there's such a thing called momentum. And when you write a few sentences, a few paragraphs, you'll get the momentum to write the next paragraph. So that's a great time management tip to, you know, not only have your values aligned, but also to really break down your tasks into minute by minute segments. And yes, you can get that specific. And I've found that the most successful time managers in the world are managing their time in 15-minute segments, and that's how they really get the most out of themselves in their day.
Now, I do have another question to ask, obviously, but you hit on something really important that I want to emphasize here, and it's that starting is actually harder than the act of doing. So, like in my case also, when I write a book, it's starting that is the hard part. It's writing that first paragraph or even writing that first sentence. And there are like many cases proven again and again where starting is the harder part. Like for a rocket, 50% of the fuel is just to get it a few inches off the ground. So that ability to, like, once you start, it definitely gets easier and easier over time. And I'm always studying, like, how can I better utilize the time that I currently have? And it's very fascinating to hear that some of the top people break their time down into 15-minute chunks. But how do these people determine what goes into that time and also find the time to create schedules where they're doing those 15-minute chunks?
Yeah, so a couple things there. They schedule everything. So, for example, they'll literally put into their phones, we nowadays in today's technology and world, we all have some kind of smartphones, at least most of us do. And if not a smartphone, maybe it's a calendar on your computer or a written calendar, whatever works for you. But schedule into your calendar what you'd like to do in that day. I'd like to work on this book project. I'd like to get some meditation and some reflection. I'd like to exercise. You know, you might have meetings with people. You might have work tasks you need to get done. Really scheduling it in is huge. And the beauty behind that is that when you're putting it into your calendar, and then when you have it in your smartphone or whatever device or method is good for you for scheduling, you're able to reference that during the day. And of course, we're going to have, you know, things that might come up. Maybe we have to be flexible and change our plans. But the beauty is that we have some sort of general guideline to go about our day with. And you know, that's definitely a great tool to have, scheduling it into your calendar. And then you said, you know, how do we know what to put into those 15-minute segments? And that's definitely a great question, because we want to make sure, as I said earlier, that we're working on the right things. There was this one successful entrepreneur I spoke with named Rick Woods, and he's a professional organizer. So he helps people organize their homes, their lives, and to find clarity through that organization. And what Rick said is it's really about getting those top two priorities done each day. And by priorities, that can mean tasks or responsibilities or whatever top two items are on your list for that day. Because that, what happened was, I was telling Rick that we all have these endless to-do lists. I do that all the time. I have tons of to-do lists with, no joke, just 30 items on it. And I'm overwhelmed, you know, where do I begin? And what I learned from my friend Rick is, you know, don't worry about having to cross off every item on that, you know, to-do list. But if you can just get two really good things done, really prioritize and important tasks done each day, you're going to feel great about yourself. You'll be pushing the ball forward. You'll be, you know, moving forward with your life. So that's a huge thing. If you can just get two tasks, whatever it is that you are focusing on, done for that day. And again, those tasks can of course be broken down into subtasks as well. So you can break that down and schedule it into your, into 15-minute segments. But yeah, that's definitely huge. Two things a day doesn't seem like a lot, but it really adds up over the course of a year.
And I could, that's the compound effect, where like all these small things you're doing that don't really seem to be adding much value in the beginning, just a little bit, they have such a profound effect when you're able to look out and see, like, a year later, 2 years later, or even like a few months later, you start to really see those effects. And one of the things you mentioned with that to-do list, as many as 30 things on it, I feel like there are a lot of people who have a similar situation where they have so many things that they need to do, obviously not enough time to do it. But something with the to-do list is that you have so many things to do that it's hard to explore all the opportunities that you're given or that are available. And some of them you have to say yes to, others you have to say no to. So how do you recommend that we discover the best opportunities for ourselves on the road to success?
Yeah, so I would ask yourself, finding out your best opportunities, is where do you see yourself making your biggest impact, your most significant impact to society, to the world? And for some, this may come right away. It could come within an hour or a day. But also for many, including myself, this can take a long time. This can take weeks of reflection. So don't beat yourself up if it takes a little bit longer than you'd like. That's actually good because you're probing the inner depths of your own psyche. So a couple tips on how to do that. You can reflect in a journal. Reflection is something that works well for me, and it's something I like to share with others. It's also worked well for some other people I've talked to. So reflect in a journal. It's also good to keep a journal with you throughout the day if you can, of course. You can jot down notes in it, or you can jot down notes in your iPhone. I find that meditation is a very useful tool to know and understand yourself better. You know, what's your priority? And then even deeper than that is, what's your purpose? Why am I here on this earth? You know, what am I doing here? So that's a great way. And then I found, and this ties into some of the authentic leadership that I've, you know, not only studied and researched, but I've applied, and I've interviewed many of the top leaders in the world, is that it's entering into the community. It's talking to other people and seeing what they see in us. Now, there's a strong balance here, because there are some people who are going to give you bad advice and you don't want to listen to everybody. However, it could be a trusted friend. It could be a business colleague. It could be someone you know, like, and respect. It could be someone you admire, someone who you know has good feedback. They might be able to give you some insight as well. And of course, if they give you insight that doesn't resonate with you, that's okay. You can discard it. But what I found is that when you mix the reflection with the meditation, with the talking to others, it's a great formula to find, okay, what are some patterns? What are some things I'm seeing that are really my most significant impact to this world? It could be, you know, maybe it's becoming an entrepreneur, or it's, you know, some form of speaking or in writing. Maybe it's traveling, you know, maybe it's starting, you know, some kind of initiative. Whatever it is for you, it's going to be different for each person. But yeah, when you mix those methods, it'll help you to start to see patterns. And my reminder to your listeners, Mark, is to be gentle with yourself. Realize that it's a process and it takes time. But as you keep asking yourself those questions, you can really find out, okay, what's my purpose? Why am I here? And how can I put that into place in the world?
And it's interesting how we talk about the best opportunity and you focus on creating the best impact. And I feel like that's a really great way to view it, because we have such a limited time to leave the legacy that we want to leave behind. So creating that best impact and choosing opportunities that resonate with that is definitely something really important. And having big impact, that's also something that you need to have in order to be an effective leader. And I mean, your book, Reach Your Mountaintop, that's like climbing a mountain. But like, if you think of something like Mount Everest, in many cases, it's a team of people with a leader or two who are helping them get to that level. So with leadership in mind, because I mean, we need to be leaders to reach the top of our mountains. What are some of the elements you have seen as effective leaders in all of your study of authentic leadership?
Yes. So in terms of, you know, climbing your mountaintop, which is a metaphor for, you know, reaching your own version of success, not the version of success handed to you by society, is, you know, first and foremost, it's really about leading yourself. Leading yourself means doing what you know is right, whether or not society or the outside world agrees with it. Now, again, feedback can often be helpful, but at the end of the day, it's your life. It's your purpose. You have to really be clear about your own values so you can know, you know, am I choosing the path that's my own? Am I leading myself and doing what's right? Am I staying true to my values and having that integrity? So all that summed up into, you know, one word is really self-leadership. Leadership begins with leading yourself. And by all means, you know, leadership is also leading others, and we have to have that vision. But I always like to start with the self-leadership, because if you haven't first led yourself, it's a lot harder to lead other people. So that's very important. The next tip I have in terms of, you know, authentic leadership prowess and, you know, really putting that into place is to reveal your true self to the world. You know, being authentic and vulnerable and being transparent. Now, this doesn't mean that you have to tell the world every little setback you've ever had, and you don't have to bare your soul if you don't want to. You know, my style, I'm very, very transparent. But when I share this with others, I tell them, you don't have to tell the world everything about yourself, but just be open about what you're facing. You know, have that sense of vulnerability, that sense of self-awareness that allows you to be authentic. And actually, when you're authentic, that's when people will trust you. And when they trust you, you can, in fact, lead them. So that's very, very powerful. And, you know, so I mentioned, you know, leading yourself, revealing your true self, you know, to the world, which is, you know, very, very important. And a lot of leaders that I found, they don't have a hidden agenda. So what I mean by that is, by all means, we all, you know, we need to make money, we need to grow our businesses, we need to obviously provide for ourselves and our families. That's all important. So that's very, very good. What I found in these leaders I've spoken to, and including myself, is they have something that comes above making money, and that is helping other people. And I'm not paying lip service to this. You know, these leaders don't pay lip service to helping others. Like, from the bottom of their hearts, they care about helping other people. They have that purpose to, you know, sincerely give someone some kind of message, or whether it be inspiration or hope or a practical tip or advice or something that will help them. So that no hidden agenda, that purpose that comes above money, is a very common theme amongst a lot of the authentic leaders I've spoken to.
And I love this recurring theme of impact and giving back, because I mean, again, we don't have, I feel like we all think that we live forever until something happens and we realize, uh-oh, we don't have as much time as we thought. So I love for everyone to keep that in the back of their mind, that you're not going to live forever. So think about what kind of impact you want to leave behind. And being a leader, that's going to have a big impact on the people who you lead, assuming you're being that authentic leader, creating that strong impact. But going back to the mountain analogy, because I really love this with leadership. If you're trying to climb a big mountain, like let's say Mount Everest, that's not for like everyone. Like, you have to be in like a decent shape. You have to basically know what it's going to entail, because it get like really cold, and like when you get close to the top, like very life threatening. So how do we find the right group of people to lead?
Yes. So that's another, you know, very, very good question. And it's a nice question that, you know, naturally progresses from our conversation. And I also want to point out that I love your wisdom. I love how you have that awareness to know that, like you said earlier in our conversation, we need to leave a legacy, and also that we're not here forever. And sometimes it can feel like, oh, you know, we've got forever, and, you know, it might feel that way. But I think that's great awareness to know that our time is limited. So, you know, finding the right people to lead, and in fact, the right people to be around, that, you know, it's a challenge. It's a challenge. So some tips that work for that are, I mentioned earlier, revealing your true self. I've found, and this is easier said than done, but it becomes easier with practice, that when you are your true self, when you take off the mask and you're not paying lip service to being who you really are. I mean, you really are in reality your true self. You're going to naturally attract the right people into your life. Now, I want to keep it practical as well. So there's a couple fronts here. On a social media perspective, I found in my own experience that the more I was myself, the more kinds of right and good people I sort of connected with on social media. So that's one thing. And then in terms of face-to-face, in reality, this is the second part of my response. This is where you don't want to be sitting back. You have to actually go out there and make things happen. So part one was that, yes, you're going to attract the right people in your life by being authentic. And then part two, finding those right people to lead, is get out there and go to Chamber of Commerce events. There's Rotary Clubs. There's Lions Clubs. There's Kiwanis. It could be even be Toastmasters. It could be I've been to business networking groups where entrepreneurs meet. Entrepreneurs like speakers and authors and coaches and consultants and marketers. And what I found is that when I got around fellow entrepreneurs, fellow speakers, authors, coaches, consultants, those were people that I could lead. And when I interviewed them, they in turn also said they were leading others who were gravitating towards the kinds of the kinds of habits and the kinds of difference-making opportunities that they were gravitating towards. So it's about putting yourself out there, taking those positive life-affirming risks, and knowing that, you know, there are good people out there. I mean, there's plenty of bad people in the world, but there's also a lot of good people. You gotta, you know, keep looking for that right group to join. Do networking. Remember, face-to-face is really the best way to talk to people. And, you know, and then beyond that, just keep being your true self. And, you know, that's how you'll really find those right people to connect with, to surround yourself with, and to eventually lead.
And you mentioned something very interesting, how face-to-face is the best way to do it. But in the world that we live in, it's a lot of more texting, a lot more like things that are not necessarily creating that face-to-face impact. So how do you recommend we get more of the face-to-face conversations to happen than responding to an email or replying to a text?
Yes. So here's the key to remember. This could be social media. This could be a text message. It could be email, some kind of online virtual method of communication. You want to use it as a complement to face-to-face interaction, not a substitute. A complement, not a substitute. So what I mean by that is, in terms of trying to get these face-to-face conversations, you may need to use your, you know, the digital world, email, or maybe it's a phone call, or maybe, like, you know, like you said, it could be a text message, or, you know, maybe it's the Messenger app on Facebook, or however method works best for you. It's okay to use those as tools, as long as you're looking in some form or another to, you know, talk with people, you know, face to face. And a great example could be, you know, emailing someone that you met in a networking group and saying, you know, hey, can we grab coffee? I'd love to, you know, learn more about you. It could be, I'd love to, you know, pick your mind about your area of expertise. You know, maybe you want to feature them on your blog. A lot of times I'll feature people on my blog or my YouTube channel, and they like that. So I find that those online tools are good as long as they're used as a complement to face-to-face, not a substitute. And then if you can't simply, you know, you live too far away from someone to be able to meet them face-to-face, the next best method is phone. Right now you and I, we're not meeting face-to-face, but we're connected here, you know, talking to each other, you know, through our voices. So the phone could be good. And then as a last resort, if you can't meet someone face-to-face and they're not available via phone, yes, then you can use email or some form of social media. So yeah, how we can really get more of the face-to-face is, I'd like to emphasize, you know, make the effort to ask people, you know, literally ask them, do you have time to meet for coffee? Do you have time to meet for lunch? Do you have time to meet for a quick chat? And people won't always be free, but the more you ask, the more likelihood is that you'll get a yes from somebody.
And I mean, face-to-face, definitely, it has such a big impact. Like, there are people who, when I meet them face-to-face, it creates like such a different experience. And also talking to someone, like, not through a series of emails and text messages, which are great, like, because they help you with communication. But when you put face-to-face and conversations, like real, like, phone call conversations, like live, before you put the email and texting, it does create a better relationship between you and the people who you are engaging with. But to bring the conversation back to the mountaintops, there are some people, obviously, who don't make it to the end of the mountain there on Everest. And I obviously bring up Everest because it's the tallest one, but they're at Everest. They're at some point. Some people halfway, three quarters, turn back. Now, in the case of Everest, like, that could be because you realize if you climb, you could very possibly not make it back down the mountain. But in a business or in a personal life context, people are making that same turn away. And it's not as threatening as like dying up on the top of a mountain. And I feel like in this scenario, people are not reaching their full potential there. Setting a big goal, but not really getting there, or they feel stuck. So, Jeff, what do you believe holds most people back from reaching their full potential?
Yes. So as we you know, remember this this analogy, which is, you know, the mountaintop and climbing those mountaintops. And this doesn't mean, you know, literally being a rock climber, but of course it means being, you know, and living your own version of success. The first part of my response to your thoughts there and your insights are to remember that we talked earlier in this conversation about your why, to also think about, as you're climbing that mountain, what is your end destination? You know, what is your end goal? And remember that if you are turning around out of fear, if you're turning around because you're afraid of reaching your potential, or maybe you're afraid of success, or afraid of what someone might think, or afraid of something else, that's not a good reason to turn around. You know, push into that fear, keep going. But if you're turning around because you realize it's the wrong mountain, you know, it's not the right path for you, that's okay. So it's a huge, huge distinction. And this is the first part. I have a second part. The thing to remember is that there are plenty of good reasons to turn around. Just make sure it's for the right reason. You have to trust your intuition. Ask yourself, why am I turning around? Or why do I want to turn around? Is it out of fear? Is it out of a negative reason? Or is it out of a positive reason? So that's a very important internal clarification each person needs to make. And then you asked, you know, what are some of those, you know, roadblocks and difficult challenges we face that stop us from reaching our true potential? So let's now take the example of, we don't want to turn around except the fear is holding us back. What I would say to that is, I like to use a little bit of sort of like a paradoxical intention. What I mean by that is, as you're having the frightening feelings inside of you, you know, like, you know, maybe you're having some scary thoughts about what might happen. You're catastrophizing and you're afraid that things might fail or things might not work out. Push into that. That's actually a sign that you should keep going forward. What I've told people in my speeches before is that doubt is actually a good thing. A lot of people think doubt is negative, but actually when you view doubt as a signpost that, wait a second, there's more for me to learn here. There's more for me to understand about myself. There's more for me to grow in my potential. Keep going. So what helps people is to remember that fear and doubt aren't bad unto themselves. It's how we use those feelings and emotions that matters. And if we can use those kinds of feelings as signposts, then we can keep going forward. So yeah, those are some big things that hold people back. The fear, the doubt, the self-sabotage, not thinking we're good enough, and then the criticism from other people. In terms of not thinking you're good enough, you just got to, you know, literally affirm to yourself, you know, you are worthy, you are good enough. You know, reprogram your mind, you know, really affirm to yourself that you are a gift to this world, that you have a lot to offer. And then in terms of the criticism from other people, that's really about being true to your own values and knowing yourself. The more you know and understand yourself, the easier it becomes to deal with the critics. So those are some of the common roadblocks, and those are some potential solutions to get past them.
And it's fascinating how you take things like fear and doubt and you use them as an edge, in a sense, where self-doubt in one area, this could be something that I actually have to be pursuing. Like sometimes when a fear comes, that's something that you have to be pursuing. It could be a sign that this is something that you definitely need to be doing, but fear and doubt, obviously big components that affect a lot of people for worse in most cases, but in some cases for better based on some of the things that we discussed earlier. But usually we get fear and doubt when we're in the midst of a big challenge, and climbing any type of summit is a challenge, but in any case, like, it is a challenge. Regardless of how big the summit seems to one person or the other, it's a challenge to the person who is in that trek. So, Jeff, I know you've had to face certain challenges along your journey. That could go for literally every person on the planet. But what is one big challenge that you have faced in your journey and a powerful lesson you learned during that challenge?
Yes. So one big challenge, and this is, you know, what comes to my intuition as a great story to share, is that this is actually going, you know, way back to my high school years, and, you know, I'll keep it to a nutshell so I can get to the powerful lesson that will benefit your listeners, but just so they can very quickly have the backstory. I was a big college recruit baseball athlete, so I did really, really well on the summer teams I played for. I grew up in Connecticut, so I played on the top summer travel baseball teams. I went to showcases. I had all of these interested colleges who saw my my great hitting skills and my overall abilities as a ball player. So I was this big recruit athlete. I was going to play baseball in college. I literally had committed to do that. And, I had done really well my junior year of high school playing baseball. So senior year rolls around. My teammates are all excited for me. I do really, really well in tryouts. We were facing this really tough pitcher in one scrimmage. No one could hit him. I crushed a double, so I did really, really well. I was on cloud nine, and out of the clear blue sky, I didn't make the team. I got cut. You know, it was like the rug was pulled out from under my feet. And, there's a beautiful lesson here that's going to apply to a multitude of circumstances. But at the time, you know, that when I was 17 years old, I had no perspective. So that was the first thing, is I had no perspective. And then the second thing is that all my self-worth was tied to being on this baseball team. Looking back on it now, I can see it from a different perspective. I've traveled the world. I can view it within a larger context. But at the time, I had no perspective, and all my self-worth was tied up into being on that team. And then I hit rock bottom. I was beyond depressed. I didn't know if I could go on. I mean, it was like my life was taken away from me, because my whole life was baseball at that time. So here's the lesson I learned while I was at rock bottom, of course, and I'm being authentic here. I learned your self-worth does not depend on external circumstances. So that's the key lesson. And as I wrap up here, I'll explain how that can apply to a variety of circumstances. Your self-worth does not depend on external circumstances. And that insight came to me while I was in deep meditation at a rock bottom point in my life after this setback as a 17-year-old high school athlete. Why I love sharing this with others is because our situations and circumstances are vastly different, but feelings are universal. Feelings are what connect us. And the feeling of devastating loss is the same. So, you know, some people may not care about sports. They may not care about baseball. Maybe they don't relate to that particular setback, but they can relate to the feeling of devastating loss I had. And if you can remember that your self-worth doesn't depend on getting or not getting a job or making a team or what other people think or some other result you want to have. You know, look, always do your best. Always give it your all. Always put your heart into everything. All that is true. With that said, at the end of the day, remember that your self-worth does not depend on those external circumstances. It's a beautiful lesson that I learned that came from a very difficult setback.
That is a very powerful lesson. And just to give an analogy, I feel like this really set a clue for me as I was listening. When we think about income, we know that it's good to have multiple streams of income. You get some income here, some income there, because if one of them falls apart, you're fine. But we also have to do that for our self-worth. And that's something that you mentioned, and your story is very clear in the importance of this, because at one time, like, baseball was your entire self-worth, but now you've been able to get this perspective. You have different things that help you with your self-worth. So I encourage all Breakthrough Success listeners, think about what is igniting your self-worth. Is it just one thing that is doing it? Or do you have it spread out across multiple things where if something doesn't go your way, like in Jeff's case, like you don't make the baseball team, you feel like you got the carpet pulled from underneath your feet, you have to still have other areas you can go to where you can still feel that self-worth. So Jeff, I mean, that is such a powerful lesson for us. Thank you for sharing that with us.
You're welcome. You're welcome. And that was a perfect recap. I mean, you just hit, I'll use as a metaphor, you hit a home run, you hit a grand slam out of the park. It's so true. Like you just said, to have other factors that play into what make you who you are. I love that. You know, have a diversified portfolio of, you know, whether it be hobbies or activities, or like you said, you know, other things that can factor in. So, you know, so you don't make the same mistake I did, which was putting all my self-worth into one thing. And I put all my eggs into one basket. And when that didn't go my way, I completely lost sight of all perspective and, you know, had this devastating feeling of loss and setback. So very, very good recap.
And to similarly get to the point where we just recap some of the things that we've gotten from this episode, I mean, one of the focuses has been Reach Your Mountaintop, which is a book which helps us to find those hidden opportunities and setbacks and achieve all these goals that we're after. And you also wrote the book, The Power of Authentic Leadership. So those are two books that we should add to our reading list. But another question that I love asking people, because I am a very avid bookworm. Like, I read like 10 to 30 books per month. I'm the guy who's like listening to audiobooks during commutes. So I was wondering if you could share with us three great book recommendations that you believe will have a positive impact on us.
Yes, absolutely. So yeah, definitely. Thank you for the shout out on those two books that I have, I've written there, though, you know, those definitely add value. So, okay. So three books that will have, a positive impact. Okay. So one book that comes to mind is, and, you know, maybe you've read it, The Magic of Thinking Big. I believe that's by, David Schwartz. And what's great about that book is it just, you know, really opens your mind up to the power of, you know, thinking in terms of no limitations and, you know, of really thinking big. So that's a big one. Another one that comes to mind is I would recommend Deep Work by Cal Newport. And the reason why I'm recommending Deep Work is because it really focuses on getting the reader to, this ties back to what we talked about on this podcast discussion, to really think about, you know, what is your greatest impact and, you know, the most significant meaning you can make to this world, and cut out those distractions and give yourself that opportunity for deep work. And then finally, the final book recommendation I have is Essentialism. Essentialism is by a guy by the name of Greg McKeown. And you know, what I love about this book is that you know, I'm you know, connected to him on LinkedIn. And you know, Essentialism is really about, you know, the subtitle is The Disciplined Pursuit of Less. And what I love about this book, it's very similar to Deep Work, is, you know, it's really about thinking, you know, what are those few priorities I can focus on? You know, what is my biggest area of impact to this world? So, I mean, you know, if you combine The Magic of Thinking Big with Deep Work with Essentialism, you are going to be a force to be reckoned with.
Jeff, thank you for sharing those three great book recommendations. And all of those books and the show notes can be found at markoberti.com/E123. And before we close out this episode, I'd love to flip the tables a little bit. So, Jeff, I've asked you several questions throughout our time together, but what is one question that you believe we need to be asking ourselves more often?
Yes. So one question that you know, need to be asking yourself more often is, am I actually applying what I know? Am I actually applying what I know? It's one thing to know your values. This is a very subtle yet important distinction. It's one thing to know your values, but it's a whole new ballgame to applying your values. It's one thing to know you need to eat healthy or that you need to work out, and it's a whole new ballgame when it comes to actually eating those salads and actually going to the gym, just to use a couple quick examples. So one key question to ask yourself is, are you applying what you know? Because greatness is found in not what you know, but more importantly, in what you apply.
Jeff, thank you for that really great question. And that's definitely something that we should be thinking about as we're working towards our summits and going on our way towards high performance. And I'm very appreciative of all of the amazing insights that you shared throughout our time together. And Breakthrough Success listeners, if you want to learn more about Jeff, the book that we've been talking about constantly is Reach Your Mountaintop. You can get that on Amazon. And he also has a book, The Power of Authentic Leadership. While we were talking a lot about reaching that mountaintop, leadership did make a good portion of our conversation as well. So if you want to get a deeper dive into reaching your mountaintop or the power of authentic leadership, check out those two great books, both of them on Amazon, written by our guest, Jeff Davis. Jeff, I cannot thank you enough for being a guest on the Breakthrough Success Podcast. It was a pleasure to have you on the show.
Mark, it was an honor. I had a great time. Thank you for having me, and keep up the fantastic work you're doing.
How does over 100 retweets per day sound to you? My free ebook, 27 Ways to Get More Retweets on Twitter, has you covered. I use the methods within this ebook to get over 10,000 retweets every single quarter. To learn more and get access to this free resource, visit markgoberti.com/retweets.